Welcome to Heroes Asylum, issue 28, where we talk about the Doctor. To the Heroes Asylum once again. I'm Thanatos Kane, along with my trusty sidekick for today, Captain Mike. Captain Mike, how are you doing, sir?
Oh, I'm doing just fine here. We've got a little rain rumbling, so if anybody hears any thunder, you know, in the background, that's what it is. I'm from both sides. I think you were saying you get some rain over on your side.
Yeah, it's coming down pretty ugly about over here. It looks like the sky's about to open up, the end of the world, you know, Middle Earth, all that weird stuff is happening now, so. Hey, perfect day to be inside and listen to a little bit of the Heroes Asylum stuff.
That's right, that's right.
Let's rock this out, shall we?
Yes, sir.
So, I guess, as always, when we start the Heroes Asylum, we always start with the Admissions Ward.
News from the Admissions Ward.
All right, kids, here we are. I'm going to go ahead and handle the admissions award today because Kane will be handling our subject matter of the day, which, like he was saying at the beginning, we will be finally discussing the doctor, the good doctor, Doctor Who. Me as a newbie in that world, I'm minuscule familiar, so hopefully, you know, I'll be more educated.
Yes, so, that's the goal for today.
Yeah, that is the plan. And also for you Doctor Who fans out there, you know, we want to definitely represent you guys out there. So thank you for definitely listening out there, and you Whovians. But starting off, first thing I have for news, something that's been near and dear to Kane's, in my heart, since it's actually been announced and it's been on, which is one more week. Swamp Thing announced, you know, it is rolling up in its final week. So far, it's been an amazing show. But we have actually found out the news as to what happened. And apparently, during, I guess, the AT&T Time Warner merger, that some of the bean counters were looking at the cost of this. It didn't come down to what the original rumors were out there was taxes and things like that. It did eventually come down to money, but it came down to that each episode was pretty costly, and I can understand that. Just the special effects have been just out of this world, especially this week. If nobody's seen it yet, we see the Blue Devil finally, you know. And you know, of course, you know, you have, you know, Virginia Madison, and I wish I could remember the actor's name that does her husband.
William Ford.
What's that?
William Ford. I don't think it's. I know his last name is Ford or yeah. John Ford. I know he's a Ford, but I'm sure he costs a pretty hefty price tag.
Yeah, he's a known actor. He's not a cheap one either. So I'm thinking that's, you know, with that, and like I said again, the special effects have just been outstanding, and I'm pretty sure
makeup has been great too. Yeah, the Swamp Thing, magnificent. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure filming out in the swamp isn't a cheap endeavor either. So
well, at least we know what the truth is. Yeah. I mean, it's good to know. I mean, it's financial, you know, especially with a merger thing that's going to happen. I mean, I think WCW was one of those casualties many moons ago of a merger with AOL also.
Yeah,
so,
they were also,
you know,
part of that. Yeah.
This kind of makes sense that it would happen to Swamp Thing. It sucks because, you know, I think it just really started to hit its stride, and kind of like Constantine was at NBC. It was really starting to hit its stride, and then they gave it the good old axe. But
yeah, well, hopefully crossing our fingers. Like you and I were talking off air in our green room, so to speak. We were doing, you know, we were saying, I think if DC Smart do these one-off little seasons to introduce these characters, we've actually introduced three characters in this one. We're maybe getting one more, I think, by the episode two.
I believe so. I mean, they've hinted at it.
Yeah, well, they call them that in, like, if you look at the casting role.
The cult bar, man. So
But maybe, you know, if they did this next, you know, next year or the end of, you know, or beginning next year, bring in another one, bring in Zatanna, you know, do a series for her, introduce a couple extra characters, and maybe build up to a Justice League Dark and just introduce those more smaller characters one season at a time, I think would be, I'd be happy. But, and also HBO's, you know, getting linked up now with DC as far as the HBO Cinemax, or the, I think they're calling it HBO Max streaming service. They're actually working in tandem with DC. I think it's Titans or Doom Patrol will be aired not only on DC streaming, but also on HBO Max.
Oh, that's going to help, especially with a bigger platform. That makes sense.
Bigger platform, so. You get more eyes on the service. You also get money. You're going to get the HBO money kind of back in. They're probably not going to back it up 100%, but maybe they'll throw some money towards them. So it'll help with that. I mean, because they did announce that, you know, they do have Titans coming out. They did announce that they have Doom Patrol coming out for another season. So it is still pushing forward. So good going. And then again, like I said, we do have our news on the Swamp Thing. Another thing on DC, we're going to kind of stick with DC for right now. We do have some more. I have Marvel towards the end here, so don't think I'm showing favoritism, folks. It's just that's how my list actually has showed up.
Captain Mike Rolls.
We do have news that Wonder Woman 1984 has returned for reshoots. And I don't know about you. What are your thoughts on reshoots?
It's reshoots. I mean, it's just normally they're going to do some pickups, maybe add some stuff to the scenes, add more flavor, more. They're just going to add to the nuances. That's it. I mean, maybe record a couple lines, you know, just maybe one scene didn't work, replace it with another one. That's all it is for. Yeah. They always, when they make these big budget films, they always, you know, they always make the budgetary necessary for reshoots. So to me, it's not a big thing. It's not a, end of the world thing. It's just like, it's normal. So
yeah, that's how I look at it too. Most of them have reshoots. Some of them are just even simply just, hey, I need you to go out there and drive that truck and pretend like you're that person. And, you know, sometimes they're not even, you know, first level or, what's the word they use? Unit. It's not even like the first unit, group. It's usually like a second or third might be going out there to do, you know, hey, we need a picture, you know, a good video of somebody opening up a door. Put your hand up there.
Yeah, exactly.
Sometimes that's all they really are.
It's something. So it could be very silly, like an interior shot, outdoor shot. It could be like, hey, you know, there's a cloud. I need to move over here in this shot to make the background look better. It can be very silly. I mean, depending on the situations, but from what I hear, the filming on Wonder Woman 84 has gone pretty smooth.
Yeah, looks like it has. It's just funny that one of the articles, or a few actually, I've read a couple of them where they were like, you know, in 1984 returns for reshoots and DC fans have Snyder cut fears. I'm like, oh my, stop. Stop with that noise.
I am so, I don't know about how you feel about this. I mean, at first I thought it was kind of cute. Oh, you know, the Snyder cut, you know, release it. But enough already.
Yeah.
Enough. If it's out there, it'll come. But, come on.
I mean, unless he was like completely done, like Donner, for example. Like when Donner did Superman 1, he was filming Superman 2. You know, Lord of the Rings wasn't the first movie to film a bunch back to back to back to back. He was actually filming 1 and 2 at the same time. That's why a lot of the same actors, a lot of the same sets didn't change. They were still there because what he did on the first one. And so that's, you know, and so when it came time that they drew a blank on who the producers were, something Hines, when they pulled the plug on him doing it anymore because they didn't want him, there's, I guess, some, you know, whatever the rule, you know, the thing was behind it. The next guy just basically stepped in and just plugged in some, some scenes. If you watch the Snyder, if you watch the Donner's cut, there's a DVD out there. It's not bad. You can see where certain things were done. All that was done with his was certain things happened in different orders is really all it is. So
a couple scenes were added too, which I thought were kind of good. So, you know, it is what it is. So
very good. Yes, sir. So that is that. From a moment of silence, you know, for an actor, one of my favorite actors, actually, Rutger Hauer passed away, actually on the 19th. It was not announced until I think almost 5 or 6 days later.
Yeah, he had passed away like almost a week, I believe.
Yeah, well, it was a week from when it was announced, I think, because by the time somebody had announced it, they had already had their service. They had already had the service and funeral and he was buried. So, Rutger Hauer, Blade Runner, is one of my all time favorites. You know, so
Paul Beatty himself passes away. I mean, I think it was like kind of ironic. They showed something online where Rutger Hauer passed away in 2019, and his replicant character in Blade Runner also passed away in 2019, which I thought was kind of too bad he didn't have one of those that brilliant speech in the rain speech. So
yeah. Most people don't realize if you're an Anne Rice fan at all, actually the Vampire Lestat was in her image or in her mind, and when she wrote and wrote the character in the books, was actually based off of Rutger Hauer, his look. She always
he has a distinct look.
She was, you know, she had always had a want that he for him to play, you know. But I guess, you know, by the time, you know, they finally got down to actually doing it, he was a little bit too older.
So, I remember he did a movie, I believe it was Sylvester Stallone, during the late 70s, early, I think it was called Night Stalkers or Night Something. I know that he played
I know what you're talking about.
He played like a terrorist from like across, and he had to change his face. And I thought one of those, that was kind of the movie for me that I was intro to him. I was like, wow, this guy is really badass.
And he also,
Wolfgard,
he also played in Batman, the
Earl, Raiders, yeah, Mr. Earl.
Yep. So he was definitely a part of the geek world. Not a lot of movies. He was did a lot of movies in his homeland of Holland. If most people don't realize, he's from Holland. That's where he was when he passed. So that's what they were doing. Yeah, he did a lot of movies from there. So
it's really sad. We lost one of the better ones. So.
Yeah, moment of silence for him as well. And I guess this is a good transition in a way. This is a Marvel and DC news. Marvel fans might have to say goodbye to James Gunn again. Looks like after he comes back for Guardians 3 to do that, Warner Brothers is wanting to bring him back.
Yeah, that makes sense. Why not? I think he was going to do a one and done with Marvel anyway. I think, you know, he had the script for Guardians 3 written, so, you know, he knows the Guardians, per se, so
right. This
is probably going to be the last movie of the Guardians, probably. I mean, they'll probably be splintered off, or they'll make a new incarnation, or they'll be, you know, put in other movies, but it makes sense. You know, you got a guy like James Gunn, you know, you want to wrap him up and put him in your universe, and DC needs all the help they can get, especially in the movie world, so wrapping him.
I could definitely see him jumping in. I think he would be a good fit for them. He would definitely have, I think, with his sense of humor, DC needs to lighten up a little bit. I think he could balance that darkness with the lighter side of it.
Just a tad.
Yeah, and I think he would be good. And I really am looking forward to seeing his.
All right, Captain, what do you have next?
Next. Now we are actually going back into Marvel, actually. Something actually you brought to my attention. I had seen one of the deleted scenes from the Avengers Endgame. There was one rolling out there, I think about a month ago, of Tony and his daughter talking, you know, because one of those scenes, I guess, you can put it in comparison to Gamora and Thanos, you know, when he was having a talk with her after he did the final snap for him. There was that scene in there as well for Tony and his daughter. I just, you know, thought it was poignant. This week they had sent out a deleted scene that shows the Gamora's reaction to that moment. Tony Stark had passed away, and we saw all the Avengers have a very, you know, honoring moment where after Tony passes on the battlefield, they all take a knee to show, you know, show allegiance and show, you know, honor to him. But then that was one question you had had earlier, was what happened to Gamora? And in that scene, we see that she did survive his snap. And she just wanders off.
She just leaves.
Yeah.
Just leaves. So that's kind of makes sense, though. I mean, they showed it at the end of the movie that, you know, spoilers if you haven't watched, the movie's almost 3 months old.
Yeah.
You know, the Guardians at the end of the movie, they are looking for Gamora. So that's, right. I think it's going to be one of the storylines going through Guardians 3 will be that. So
yeah,
makes sense.
Yeah.
I kind of like it. It's too bad they deleted that scene. I thought it made sense.
It is. I think the knee thing, I think it was a little too long. I think you could have shown everybody kind of doing it and understood, okay, everybody's taking an e-form, and then jump to the Gamora scene, so you wouldn't have had to delete it. You could have had that moment of them showing the honor and then seeing her sneaking off and answered you know, one question right then and there. Very simple. And then, of course, I still think they should have kept the scene with him and his daughter, because that was just a...
That's just a
heart-wrenching. if nobody's seen that, I think it's still out there on YouTube.
That's a gut punch. Oh, big time gut punch.
Yeah. So, all right. And that for Marvel there. And for our AMC Walking Dead fans out there, they had just released the last and final issue of the Walking Dead comic book. So have you, were you ever a Walking Dead fan on the, of either the comic book or the show?
The comic, yes. I was a fan for a while. Kind of dropped off, kind of like the show. I liked the first four seasons. Then after the season finale of season four, I kind of just dropped off. The series just got like too redundant for me.
Right.
Same thing with the comic. Like there was a couple of really good stuff. You had Rick, the original cast, and it was going forward. And then like they kind of went forward, and to me, just it got a little repetitive after a while. I mean, the characters are good, but I can only just take so much zombies for a while, right, and so much apocalypse. You know, I hear they're going to spin off another series of The Walking Dead on AMC because that's their moneymaker, so they're going to bleed that till it dries.
I guess if Fear of the Walking Dead's doing really good. I was the same way as you. When I watched the show, I had read the books. Not all of them, because they're like 30 volumes of The Walking Dead. I mean, it's a lot to read. So if anybody's really interested in wanting to read, you're signing up for a long trek. But they are worth it to a point. Yeah, it does get a little monotonous. But yeah, like you were saying, you know, getting another spinoff show. I mean, The Fear of the Walking Dead seems to be doing really well. But it's like they started as the prequel. But now I think they've been running so long, they're actually stepping into the actual... the actual event.
To be honest, I didn't even know that show was still on. I thought if you're Walking Dead, it was like a one and done or two and done.
No, it picked up pretty good.
No, it's on season 5, I think.
Yep.
And I think the original is on season 10, which kind of blows my mind. Like, wow, it's been on for 10 seasons?
Yeah.
That's just insane.
Now, the comic book, how the comic book ends, which I thought was really good, is they did a jump forward in time to now we're seeing the world back to normal, that they've put the world back. It's still fractured. You still have these people that are remembering what happened. The government is being slowly put back together. You see what happens to some of these characters. You see what happens to Negan. You see what happens to goodness, I just blanked again. Damn it. You see what happens to his son, Rick. Is it Rick's son?
Yeah, Rick's done
it. Yeah, but you see what happens to them.
Carl,
thank you. You see that Carl, there's a statue, a wood carving of Rick. Apparently Carl did it. You see that Carl's still interacting with some of them. You see he's interacting with Negan and a few other people. And I guess it's up to their, you know, it's kind of leading up to kind of a ceremony of what's happened. You see that some people have actually now taken over zombies as like property and have like, you know,
really?
Have a, like, yeah, it's very interesting. I picked it up because I'd been so far out of it. But I was like, you know, I didn't start with it, but you know, I did pick it up and I read, you know, up to a certain point. I was like, well, I want to see how it ends. And it's a fitting ending. You got to realize most comics don't have a true end.
No, most they just keep going.
Yeah, some keep going or they stop and then they pick up a year later and ignore what happened from this is a nice little end piece to an overall story, which, you know, I mean, there are some out there. Some of your really great graphic novels are having been getting to an end, but really an ongoing comic book series like this for as long as it's been going, you know, it's really cool to see. But they released a 72-page final issue. It's like it's supposed to be, I think they said, 3 comics in one. So if anybody out there what's that now?
Is Kirkman doing Kirkman finished the last issue?
Yeah, creator Kirkman acknowledged the closing of Walking Dead. An unannounced may frustrate some readers, but you know, explain that this is just he's done. I mean, you got to realize.
He's, you know what it is, you know, to be honest, let's be real. I mean, he's raking in that money from AMC.
But so not only that, really, I mean, you got to realize how long has he been writing? This is 193.
Yeah, he's raking in the dough. I mean, he's done it for a while. So, you know, why not just go out on top? Let the TV show just continue. And
yeah,
I mean they're not even borrowing from the books anyway. They just kind of went on their own path. But, you know,
you have to realize the series began 2003. October 2003 is when the issue one came out. He's been doing
2000.
Yeah. So he's been doing it for 16 years now. Almost.
That's a long time.
So, no, not 16 years. I'm sorry. Wow, my math's off there.
That's 2003.
But
16?
So,
yeah, 16.
Yeah. So maybe my math is okay. But no, I mean, he's been doing that a while. I don't think it's the money thing. I think it's just, hey, I'm good. I got my story out. I did it. I can end with dignity. I don't have to end with somebody yelling, "You're done. We're kicking you off your own book. Goodbye." He held on to his own property, and I think that's a great way to end.
Why not? You know, we'll go out on top and then maybe do some new projects.
Exactly.
Good for him.
And now for any of you other, I guess, indie books, if nobody's aware, the Boys have debuted this weekend on the Amazon Prime Network. And if nobody is familiar with The Boys, it is sort of I do liken it very much to Watchmen. In a way that it's
similar, but
now. Well, let me finish my descriptor for
okay,
it.
Okay, okay,
I was
okay,
saying
okay.
I'm likening it to Watchmen because it is outside of the realm, and they are a fractured heroes in that way that they are doing things for themselves. It's a very anti-hero-esque. There's really no true heroes. Everybody is flawed. Humanly in some way, you know, everybody from the Homelander who, you know, who's like their Superman to, you know, to the Deep, to even the one person that we follow, the one new superhero we follow, Annie January, I think her name's Starbright. Yeah. Even the Boys who, you know, are on here, you know, led by, you know, Carl Urban, Billy Butcher, even they are fractured individuals. They are a group of vigilantes that just, they don't have any powers, but they see what's happening and they want to correct things. It's a great watch along. Seth Rogen, Evan Goldberg, and your favorite from one of your favorite shows, Eric Kripke, are creators. Yeah, for this. Yeah, they've been trying a while to get it out there. I think since actually The Boys were debuted, it's gone through a couple of you know, hands to get it out there, to get it on you know, on TV or in a movie form, and they just consistently failed. And then Kripke picked it up after his last show. He just got done doing Timeless. After Timeless, you know, got done with its one season run, Kripke picked it up, and you know, so him and Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg have been running with it. So get out there, check it out. It is on Prime.
Really good so far.
Yeah, it's fun. I'm not a heavy person for subscribing to Prime because they don't have a lot in the TV realm for me. But what they do have is really good. The Man from High Castle was on there, and if anybody's ever read the book, again, it's a alternate history where Nazis did take over. You know, we lost the Cold War in the end, and we're basically, you know, to travel from Ohio to Tennessee, you need papers. So very, very good show. Very good. You know, very fun show. So definitely, guys, check it out. It's a great book or great watch for The Boys. And it's really close. This is probably about as close to not only the storyline, but also capturing the feel of the history of the heroes and the characters in here. This one really hits its mark.
Yeah, the characters are what sells the show for me. They're, like you said, they're all flawed, dark, and, you know, there's nobody that's really a hero in the show. It's kind of like for you to decide, like, which side would you rather choose, the hero, the Seven, which I guess are the pseudo-Justice League, yeah, or the vigilantes. You know?
And it's so funny. They even do a little jabs at Marvel.
They have the
movies, the VCU for the Seven are, yes, work for the Vought, for Vought Company. And you have Seth Rogen sitting there talking about making a movie for the Vought. Yeah.
Oh,
the only person that we really have not gotten much news on is the Dark Noir.
Black Noir?
Or the Black Noir, sorry. I always want to say the Dark. But yeah, the Black Noir. We really haven't gotten much information. He's just a Snake Eyes-esque character, really, when you watch
him. He's supposed to be like the Batman-esque character of the world, I guess.
He is, yeah. He just looks so much like Snake Eyes.
But he looks like Snake Eyes, yeah.
He fights with blades and things like that. You see him, you know, at a tea, like having a Japanese tea ceremony. So, very, very ninja base, but yeah, I think he is their Batman. He doesn't talk to anybody, but so that's the only one we don't know about just yet. So,
well, but if you read the boys' comics, he does play a huge part. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they're going to get there.
They will. I mean, this I'd like.
I hope they do, because you know, if they keep it like the way it's going, I think it'll be a great turn when it does happen.
Yeah, so. I mean, nice little. I like these like eight issue or eight episode runs.
Yeah, that's going
to. I've been watching all day.
Yeah, I'm actually in episode 4 right now, so I'll probably finish that tonight, and then I'm done, and then I'm gonna be clamoring for another season, hopefully.
Yeah, and of course, who knows how long that's gonna take. So, but all right, folks. So we have wrapped up our news for today.
Yeah. That was good. All right. Nice.
So I'm gonna go ahead and turn the reins back over to you, sir.
Yeah, thank you, Captain. As always, our subject for today is the Doctor, Doctor Who. Captain Mike is not a fan. I'm not going to say not a fan, but he's not been exposed to it as many of the Whovians out there have. So what we're going to do today is we're going to... You have not been educated. So today we're going to try to do is educate the Captain and some of the folks out there who are not too interested or have never seen Doctor Who. Now, I'm not going to go back to the early 50s or 60s when the original series came out. I mean, I'll hint at it here and there. If you want to go back, I'll hit at some episodes you could watch, which are really good watches. But other than that, I'm just going to go basically, you know, if you've never seen Doctor Who or who the Doctor is, I'm going to go into that. And then we're going to go from there to characters and maybe some episodes. So let's begin. The Doctor is a Time Lord from the planet Gallifrey, Mike. He's brilliant, eccentric, down Earth. He's a champion of justice. All these things sound familiar, yes. He loves planet Earth. He's an alien. He has two hearts, by the way. Two hearts, in case you didn't get that. His physical form, once it is dying, he goes into what is called the regeneration mode that was created during the first Doctor, William Hartnell. Now, if you don't know the history of that, William Hartnell actually was a good, decent English actor for a while, but the studio wanted to replace him because he's old. He was an older guy. That led into probably one of the greatest things in sci-fi history, which is the regeneration. Regeneration between Doctors happens probably... I would say two or three years into that, if you're a doctor, if you're really popular, unless you're like Tom Baker, he was there for a long time. But usually they stay about 3 seasons, they're done, and then somebody else will take the same moniker. Now, when the Doctor regenerates, Mike, here's the big thing. He carries over with him the memories, actions that he had as the previous Doctor. So he changes physically, but he'll still have the memories and the form and the knowledge of his previous predecessor. So, I bet you didn't know that.
No, I did not know.
Okay. As we keep going. Now, in the mythos of the Doctor, there's actually 15 Doctors, but some of them are not going to count here and there. But for this synopsis, we're going to go with 13. There was a quote-unquote 12th Doctor. He's the War Doctor. There's a lot of discussion about that. Who was actually William Hurt, who passed away. R.I.P. William Hurt. But for this incarnation, the synopsis, we're going to go with 13. So there's 13 Doctors, Mike. Just want to let you know that. Now, the Doctor...
Now, William Hurt, what else has Hurt been in?
Hurt was in the original Alien movie. I think Hurt was also on Sleepy Hollow, the movie. If you don't know, William Hurt is the guy with basically the chest buster
you're
came out of.
You're talking
Alien.
John Hurt.
Is it John Hurt?
Yeah, William Hurt. Yeah, William Hurt's still alive.
Okay, William Hurt is General Ross, I'm thinking of.
Yeah, that's, yeah, there you go.
Okay,
yeah,
okay, so, John Hurt, I'm sorry. So, it's
so John Hurt was actually a doctor, really? Okay, I didn't know that.
Yes, he was the 12th Doctor, which cool. was, as they call him, the War Doctor.
Nice.
Because he was only in there for, like, he was in there during the 50th anniversary special. He's not given a clear number, but the fans have just called him the War Doctor.
Was there a full season with him?
No, he disappeared in one episode. Which was the 50th anniversary special.
He was he was kind of like the Lazenby of Bond. He's like,
yeah, Lazenby, he was, but he's carried around a decent following over the years that people liked him. You know, his actions and all that. He was a transition basically from the Doctor, which was the 8th Doctor, to the 9th Doctor. But gotcha. He was never mentioned, you know. So that's John Hurt, and he goes down as the 4th Doctor. So okay,
very good.
Anyway, the Doctor has to get around in space, and he does have a spaceship, and it's called the TARDIS, as you see, the police box. And if you don't know what TARDIS stands for, it is time and relative dimensions in space. bigger on the inside than the outside. It has its own consciousness. The ship once took humanoid form and professed its love for the Doctor, which was a weird episode in itself. It has been stuck in the form of a British police box for a very long time. Why? Because it kind of likes it that way. Now, inside the TARDIS is a distinctive six-sided round console glowing rotor molded. Now, basically, that's the incarnations of all the TARDISes, and they change with the Doctor as it goes through time. You basically go inside the ship, you'll see it's basically six-sided, almost the same. It just changes, like, you know, decor over the years, I guess we could say. But it basically looks the same. It's basically, like, literally, it just looks the same through every Doctor and all that. Glowing lights, all the stuff. And basically, the console is one of the biggest things. It's basically as iconic as the Doctor itself. So it's, you know, it is what it is. If you've ever seen it, Mike, just...
Well, no, I definitely say, I mean, if you're anything into sci-fi or anything, you know, if you go to any con at all, or, you know, pretty much, yeah, anything with a comic book store, you'll probably see a TARDIS on a sticker or something. Now, my question is there an original form to the TARDIS, or do you never see that?
You never see. I mean, there's...
You've never seen
it's actual psych. It's always like the big joke of it is it's bigger on the inside than the outside.
Right, yeah.
Stuck in that computer form, but you never see the actual size of the ship. Like, even in the 50th anniversary special, they show like a pseudo TARDIS. I guess it's like the beginning part of it when the first Doctor steals it and he leaves Gallifrey. It shows it like basically almost like a silver elevator.
Okay.
So you never quite see what the actual size of it.
It's always been just like a door of some sort. Just
It's always been very minuscule, very small. Cuts down on cost too. So yeah, that's the TARDIS. And if you ever wanted to know what it is, it's a police box, and it's been around for a very, 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 very long time. The next thing we go into the Doctor Who is the companions, which are probably as popular as the Doctor themselves. Now, most through all the years, the Doctor has always traveled with a human companion, and the reason for it is to maintain a compassionate perspective. View of the universe through new eyes. Now, he does this, and usually when he does it, he picks up young girls over the years, beginning with his granddaughter.
It's
the Doctor.
Sorry.
He began his journey in 1962 with his granddaughter, Susan, and two school teachers, Ian and Barbara. But since then, the Doctor's taken up temporary residence in the TARDIS with more recently. Pops it. The companions go in and out of his life. He basically picks them up for an adventure or two, dropping them back off. And the companions get attached to him. Then they want to go with him. The Doctor basically says, no, you stay here. It's too dangerous. And most notably, the Doctor's had companions on Earth. That's right. He has companions on Earth. They know of the Doctor, Earthbound organization known as UNIT, United Nations Intelligence Task Force. Later, Unified Intelligence Task Force, so they shortened it. And the Doctor's, one of his closest friends was Brigida Lethbridge, who is the general, and now it's been taken over by his daughter, Kate. Now, if you ever know the lineage of Lethbridge, he was the older guy with the mustache during the, I believe, John Petrie run as the Doctor, which was the third. So if you ever get a chance, that's a very old episode. I don't know if you want to go back and watch it, but that's when the TARDIS was basically Earthbound. And the reason for that being Earthbound during that time is because they didn't have enough money to do the special events. That's the Doctor's companions. Mostly chicks, but if you watch the new incarnation of the 13th Doctor, Jodie Whittaker, she takes in an old guy and a couple kids. We're going with the tech. Guess what, Mike? The Doctor has his own tech.
Yes.
You probably didn't know that.
I know of one.
We're going to go through a couple here, because he actually has more than one. The Doctor is never without his trusty sonic screwdriver.
Gallifrey
magic wand that can unlock doors, scan for various energies, and do just about anything the Doctor needs, except work on wood. Yep, doesn't work on wood at all.
So the Doctor's Green Lantern?
Pretty much, man.
That his one weakness is wood?
it just doesn't work on wood, I guess. Yeah,
okay. Those things.
It first appeared by the second Dr. Patrick Troughton as a little penlight. But wait for it. You know what it could do? It can manipulate screws. But, of course, by then the third Doctor arrived, the Sonic started to take more of a central role in his repertoire, setting off mines by remote control, providing a quick escape from prison cells. And we cannot imagine the Doctor without his trusty Sonic screwdriver. And if you've seen the latest incarnation of the Sonic Screwdriver. It's brought up a lot of controversies. I won't say why. Just if you ever get a chance, take a look at the 13th Dr. Sonic Screwdriver, and you'll know why. Now, the Doctor also has some other things at his repertoire. He has psychic paper. You want to know what psychic paper is, Mike?
Yes,
I'll tell
sir.
You what it is. Psychic paper projects whatever sort of credentials the Doctor needs that he wants the viewer to see. So, for example, if he walks in, let's say he walks into a war zone, they're going to ask him who the hell he is. Here's my credentials. He could be a general. Oh, okay, general, come on in. If he walks into a hospital, oh, come on in, doctor. If he walks in anywhere, the credentials will basically outline what he needs them to do. So that's what psychic paper is. Man, psychic paper will work for me nowadays. Tell me about that. 3D glasses. Mikey has 3D glasses, handy for seeing unique radiation floating around an object or a person that is transverse between the void of realities. Get a load of those 3D glasses, huh? He has a diary too, Mike. He writes on the TARDIS because he's a lonely dude. It's a 500-year-old volume, then 900, then most recently 1200. It's an old-fashioned journal. The Doctor has inscribed cryptic details of the myriad of his adventures all over. Time travel, nonlinear proposed. It's going to be a little bit tough to decipher, but some of his companions have been known to decipher this diary. Probably one of the most famous of his equipment is literally a stick of celery. Now, you would think of stick of celery, what the hell is that? What does it do? Well, I'll tell you what it does. For instance, you'd think it's just a decorative vegetable, but it's not. It's very crucial to detecting the presence of certain substances dangerous to the Doctor's life. So if you ever see him with a bag of little celery on his little jacket, it's basically, just trying to save his life. What do you think about that, Mike?
So celery. So his weapon is celery. I guess Popeye had spinach, so I guess I can go with that.
Gotta go with it. Remember, it's the Doctor. So you gotta go with everything. There we go. Next thing is a chameleon arch fob watch. Just think of it as a chameleon watch. It looks like a fob watch, but it's a powerful way for a Time Lord to store his or her original form to hide himself from his enemies by transforming them into another species. Both the Doctor and the Master have this use of Gallifreyan intervention. We'll get to the Master later. Perception filter. No one ever notices if you're just blending into the scenery. Maybe you're wearing one of those. Something the Doctor once cobbled together to hide himself from other enemies and enemies. Get those perception filters out there, kids. Hypercubes. The hypercubes are a glowing cube that can send through speech patterns and messages across vast distances from one Time Lord to another. And last but not least, Mike, jelly babies. Yes.
Did you say jelly babies?
Yeah. Okay. I said jelly babies. Okay, they're not really tech, but they're strategically a brilliant way to charm locals and even distract enemies. Would you like one, Mike? A jelly baby?
No, I'm good. Yeah, you're good. You keep your jelly babies. I've been told to not take candy from strangers.
So sorry, Mike. All right, now the Doctor has battled many foes throughout time and space. He's made some pretty powerful enemies, Mike. Entire races curse his name. They can't stand him. The first and foremost, which is probably the enemy you know, are the Daleks. The Daleks are pepper-shaped engines of destruction with a plunger for a right arm, an energy weapon for the left arm, and a doomed globe head with a single eye on a stalk. The Daleks are driven by a mutated blob inside the machine. The remnants of a race ravaged by nuclear war, they are dedicated to conquering the universe and exterminating everybody who is not like them. And basically, they never die. They always kind of regenerate and come back. So they're just kind of like, a bad Freddy Krueger movie. They just never go away. You will always see the Daleks in any kind of Doctor Who incarnation, except last season. They didn't really appear. There was like a mention of them, but that's about it. And I'm sure you know who the Daleks are, Mike. So.
Yes, yeah, I have definitely seen them at many conventions in the Android aisle.
Okay, speaking of Android aisle, the segue, the next enemy of the Doctor is the Cybermen. Cybermen are silver enhanced. They're emotionless humanoids who seek to assimilate other races. And they're basically like, somebody you would know if you watch Star Trek The Next Generation. If you would say that they're very closely resembling the Borg, you would be correct. because even people from Star Trek said they lifted the Cybermen from Doctor Who. So, just a little bit more advanced. The Sauratons, a squat, potato-shaped clone race of warriors with an angry streak that started a tendency in unison. Yes, potato-shaped. I did not stutter, potato-shaped. Be careful for those potatoes out there, kids. We have the Ice Warriors, towering cybernetic augmented Martians with a penchant for cold places. They can be deadly, but occasionally they can be honorable. So they're kind of like on the fence. Sometimes they can be good, sometimes they can be bad, but all in all, they're pretty scary looking. Now, my favorite, these are actually one of the newer enemies that came out probably a couple, I would say 10 years ago, the Weeping Angels. Now, you probably don't know about the Weeping Angels, Mike. If you get a chance, watch the episode Blink with the 10th Doctor. I'll give you some episodes, but that's one of them you should write down. The Weeping Angels, they look like statues, Mike, but one touch, they can hurl you back in time and steal your life energy. So don't blink. Don't blink. Whatever you do, Mike, do not blink. Because they'll send you back in time, you'll grow old, and then you'll die. The final enemy that we have here for this list is the Master. I think I've mentioned him before in one of our little talks. Now, the Master is basically the Doctor, but he's his evil incarnate. He's everything the Doctor is, but the opposite. Well, the Doctor gains his name by giving it to himself because he wants to help humanity and humankind. The Master gave his own name because he wants to rule humankind. He is just as smart, just as brilliant as the Doctor is, which makes for good, and I'm talking good, episodes, especially between those two, especially the conversation between them. The older one was really good too, but even the newer incarnations are pretty effective as well. So instead of a sonic screwdriver, guess what, Mike? You know what he has?
A sonic hammer?
No. Oh. He has a laser screwdriver. Oh. That's right. A laser screwdriver. He's a little bit more angrier than the original Doctor. Is something, you know. Eras. Now, we have a number of ways of which era of the Doctor Who's we enjoy. The first one premiered November 23rd, 1963, and it was originally planned as an educational series, Mike, which it still has that form because they go back in time and they travel all over the place, visiting world leaders, heroes themselves, different time eras. They visited Pompeii. They visited the Titanic at one time. Everything they do when they travel back in time is done with a little bit of a twist.
Is that what happened to the Titanic? He unscrewed something and with that sonic screwdriver and
this version of the Titanic was actually in space and it was a spaceship, so it was a whole other thing.
Oh, nice.
So they take little twisty things on it.
What is it? Battleship Yamato or something like that? Went on the anime series. Have you ever seen?
Very
that?
Good. Yes. Yeah. Very good. Very good. Yes, sir.
So Battleship Titanic. Nice.
Battleship.
Awesome. Okay.
The original series went on for 26 seasons and 7 Doctors until it was placed on the Dangerous hiatus in 1989. It was a weird way of canceling it. It resurfaced in 1996 with a TV movie that was produced that introduced Paul McGann as the 8th Doctor. But the BBC refers to that period as 1963 to 1996 as the classic Doctor Who. And if you didn't know who played the Master in that Doctor Who movie made for America, it was the one and only Eric Roberts. If you know who Eric Roberts is, Mike, he was in Best of the Best Part 1. He was also in The Dark Knight. And I'm trying to think what other movies he was in. He is the father of Emma Roberts, so that might help.
Very cool. Very good. I do remember when the movie came out, because I think that was one of the times that my friends growing up, the ones that were Doctor, you know, the true Whovians, that was when they're like, hey, you know, it's restarting. Now's your time to try to get in. And I think I remember watching that.
Some people, that movie is either one of two things. They either love it or they can't stand it. I'm one of the people, actually, that I appreciate Paul McGann as the 8th Doctor. And he later returned in what was called the Doctor Who shorts. They had a lot of shorts out there where he was in a movie, and it actually shows him transitioning from the 8th to the 9th Doctor, and that's what we're going to transition into, because the series actually returned, Mike, in 2005 with Christopher Eccleston as the 9th Doctor. It was not a reboot. The show just basically picked off from where it left off, just was more of a modern take to it. It's all classic. It's all new. It's all Doctor Who. And if you don't know who Christopher Eccleston is, Check out Thor: The Dark World. He's been, I believe he was in G.I. Joe: Rise of Cobra. He played Destro. So if you know who that actor is, Mike, just gives you kind of like, you know, face to name recognition right there. The Time War. Now, if you've watched Doctor Who a lot, this thing has been referenced over and over again, and there's a lot of history, a lot of vague history, but I've kind of like, I've kind of pointed it down to this little thing to try to like, you know, synopsis and just to bring it all together. I don't want to go too much into it, but let's see if I can try. The Time War was a massive battle between the Time Lords and the Daleks that reached throughout all of time and space. It caused incalculable damage. The early doctors, the 9th through 11, believed that the war had ended by pressing a button that annihilated both sides. The guilt drove the last of the lonely Time Lords until the 50th anniversary special, Day of the Doctor. In that superb tale, we learn that the incarnation of the Doctor, the War Doctor, see, so he's going to come back, a form rejected by his name, the War Doctor, played by John Hurt, met the 10th and 11th incarnations, devised a plan that did not, in fact, destroy Gallifrey, but merely hid it away, only to be rediscovered later on. It was a joyous revelation that took a lot of blood off the Doctor's hands. So, the Time War happened, but then in the 50th anniversary, it didn't happen. So, Gallifrey, the planet, was not destroyed. It was just merely hidden away. And that's one of those things that has kept going on in the series. We hear about it every now and then. Maybe it'll actually pay off at one point. Now, Mike, I got some starting points for you. I've given you the history of the Doctor. I've given you some names. I'm going to give you a couple episodes, Mike, that you may want to check out as a good starting point that you may or may not want. I'm going to give you An Unearthly Child. Unearthly Child was released in 1963. The synopsis that started it all, if you're brave enough to go back to the very beginning, the first Doctor, William Harnett, on a black and white jaunt visit to some very well-groomed cavemen. Yep, he was visiting cavemen. So if you want to check that out, Mike, it's a good starting point. But if you don't want to go that far back, I got another episode for you. It's called Spearhead from Space, 1970. Don't worry, you weren't born yet. The first major reinvention of the series and its color outing introduces the third Doctor, John Petrie. Now, if you don't know who John Petrie is, you probably know who his son is, Sean Petrie, who recently played Alfred on that Gotham series. They look very much alike. Just check it out. John and his allies with UNIT are there to defeat an alien invasion of Earth by the Auton Mannequins. Let me say that again. The Auton Mannequins were evading Earth. Yes, mannequins. And they later come back in the series too. Mike, if you don't like that one, I have another episode for you. Ark in Space, 1975. For many, the fourth Doctor, Tom Baker, is still the definitive incarnation. And this, his second adventure, Mike, also includes the legendary companion Sarah Jane, Elizabeth Salden, rest in peace, and a memorable speech about a human indomality. Not bad, huh? You might want to check those out. But if you don't want to go there, Mike, and you want to go more recently, which I have always said for you to do, go to 2005, the beginning of the new series, the episode titled Just Rose. The story just basically relaunches Doctor Who for a modern audience, refocused the series from the original companion's perspective, and taught the viewers to hold hands, run a lot, spearhead from space, and features the return of the Autons. Yes, those same Autons from 1975 return. The killer mannequins, Mike. They return. You don't want to go to that, Mike? I have another one. 2010. The 11th Hour. Now, the 11th Hour is the debut of probably the most popular Doctor in the U.S., Matt Smith. The first story for showrunner Stephen Moffat. And a distinctive fairy tale approach to the series is obvious in every frame. Also introduces Karen Gillan as Amy Pond. Karen Gillan, Nebula herself. Yes, that's right. She was also a companion on Doctor Who. Another one for you, Mike, probably the last episode, is Deep Breath 2014. This is a deep dive to the present possible. It's the 12th Doctor, Peter Capaldi, in which a Victorian-era tale that features the favorites of a pattern monster gang, clockwork droids, and an ornery dinosaur. Wow. And that, Mike, is the history and the knowledge for you. Beginning synopses for you to get into Doctor Who, sir.
Very good, very good. So Doctor Who has covered since pretty much the beginning of, I think, Star Trek, and then Star Trek vanished. So yes, so Doctor Who is reigning champ right now, I guess you could say.
I would say, you know, I don't want to say that it's the reigning champ. I mean, Doctor Who went to a different incarnation as they have now. I mean, same thing with Star Trek. Star Trek went away, came back with different incarnations. I mean, it's coming back now. Picard right. coming out next to Discovery, as I have yet to see as of yet. But it's been around as long as Star Trek has. So it's just a little different twistier tale. I mean, it's almost the same. But the Doctor is a very eccentric, unique character. And I think that one of the things that always gets me about the Doctor are his epic speeches. He does these long monologues sometimes just to get, you know, the villains away from people, you know, because he doesn't use guns. That's still one of the big things. He doesn't use any kind of weaponry. All his weapons are basically just to stun or impale, but never kill people. So he's the Sherlock Holmes of space. That's what people have compared him to. So.
Very good. Has he has Doctor Who ever done crossovers or anything of that nature with anybody?
He's done crossovers with other doctors. Like previous doctors will come in, like for the 50th anniversary, they'll bring back like the 9th, 10th, 11th Doctors, and they've done that in the past. Like William Hartnell, he teamed with Patrick Troughton and John Petrie for a couple specials. There's some stuff on YouTube where they've done a crossover with Sherlock Holmes with Benedict Cumberbatch, which was a pretty good
one. Yeah, that's kind of what I was asking. Okay, that's very cool. Okay, I like that.
It wasn't really like a... it wasn't released, but it was more of a YouTube thingy, which kind of got people like, oh man, this could happen. But it, you know, it's not officially happening, but it's one of those things that maybe the future could hold, that Doctor Who, but it's pretty much self-contained in its own universe.
I thought I had read something that there was like a crossover with it's a British show called Torchwood.
Torchwood is a spinoff of Doctor Who.
Okay, yes. So then I guess maybe my question is more, is that the only spinoff now for Doctor Who? Was Torchwood the only one? Have there been others?
There have been others. There's The Adventures of Sarah Jane Smith. There was a show that didn't last too long, which was called The Class, that was spinning out of The 12th Doctor. There were a couple other ones too, but Torchwood is probably the biggest big one. Okay. And Torchwood actually might be coming back from what I've been reading too.
Now is it usually just like not branch off, it's spinoffs with just like the companions, or is it like other things as well? Is it mostly just based off the companions?
Normally it's either the companions or an ally of the Doctor will be the spinoff. Okay. It'll never be like an older Doctor. It'll never be the Doctor itself. Doctor Who is going to be on Doctor Who dies. But it basically, it's just a story of like, hey, that companion had an interesting story. Let's follow him. Hey, that guy, you know, Captain Jack Harkness, which was the basis of Torchwood, who is actually a different character on Torchwood than he was in The Doctor. You know, they followed him with Torchwood was basically a unit of the army that followed just basically extraterrestrial activities outside.
Gotcha.
That wasn't Earth-based. So they've had their share of spinoffs.
Okay. Well, it's something, you know, definitely to not only hasn't made that impact in culture, especially in the British culture, but, you know, it's also branched out to other things. You know, it's not just The Doctor. I mean, like, you know, like we were making comments about Star Trek earlier, that it's branched off into other stories. You know, it's not like they just talked about, you know, Captain Kirk, but there's, you know, other things. So it's good to know that it's able to branch out.
It's a huge universe, and if you get into it, it immerses you. I gotta be honest, when I first started watching it, I saw it here and there on like the old PBS channel in New Jersey, so it would come on there. And I would watch it here and there with my brother, and I was like, didn't really get it. It's just not my thing. Because it was more dialogue-driven. There wasn't really any kind of action. But then I really got into it when they did the reboot in 2005. I was like, oh, this is interesting. And it had a modern-day spin on it, modern-day spin on all the villains. And I kind of got back into it and been watching it ever since. And I just think it's interesting the way they've done the show. And they've grown, and now they have a female doctor, which was what we were clamoring. Well, the Whovians have been clamoring for years.
Right.
And we've got that, and then there's just a lot of stories they can tell, especially with a new doctor. It's like you're starting all over again. Basically, it's a new season. Okay, you know what? This guy's gone, so we're going to have the same guy that you've seen, but he's going to look entirely different.
Yeah,
so.
you have the history that's there, but it's somebody different, somebody's different point of view. Now, have there ever been any crossovers in like the comic book world for Doctor? Or has he just been animated? Or not animated, but not just on the TV, I mean.
I think he's had a ton of crossovers.
Has he? Okay, very cool.
I didn't get into that because it was more minute. Like, the TV stuff is more, like, bigger stuff I wanted to get into. But he's had some crossovers. Yeah, I think he had a crossover with Star Wars.
I know of, the reason I'm asking is because I know in the back of my head, I know of IDW did a Star Trek Next Generation and Doctor Who crossover with something like with the Borg or something. That was, like, early 2000s, I think, that came out. But that's why I just know that one sticks in my head. I just didn't know if there were other ones that they may have ever done.
There's tons about that, especially in comic book form, I'm sure. Like, I didn't research a lot of the comic stuff, but I can almost guarantee there's, especially novels. I mean, the Doctor's everywhere, especially people writing. Look at the fan films on YouTube. There's probably more fan films of Doctor Who than there's anything out there.
Yeah.
He's very iconic, and I think he just started getting popularity in the States with the Matt Smith one, which he was the 11th Doctor. So that got some traction out of it. And of course, Karen Gillan was in it too. If you think about it, his companions during the 11th Doctor was Matt Smith, Karen Gillan, who is Nebula, and actually Rip Hunter was also the other companion. So, you know, a lot of people came from that show. I believe Mark Shepard was in an episode of Doctor Who. Crowley himself. So if you look at the Doctor Who series, you'll recognize a lot of actors on that show.
Very good. Yeah, that's. I mean, it's great. It's good to see that it's definitely, you know, it's shown. It's been a very big part of you know the geek verse. I mean, for so long. Again, it's just, I think it's one of those things that, you know, I look at the mountain that's in front of me as I get a little nervous. I may pick up at one point here and just, you know, just take a run for it. Maybe pick up either Smith or Tennant. I might pick up around there.
I would start with go with Edelson, because once you get with Edelson, everything else kind of just flows.
Really? Okay.
He's the intro to that world. I mean, he's only on for one season. I think the issues with the DC and he was out, but you know, David Tennant, it was a world class actor, and himself, he picks it up, and then people are, you know, and the fans of the Doctors are always different too.
It's
one of the big movie and things. Who's better, the 10th or the 11th? I'm more of a fan of the 9th and the 10th Doctors. They really hit home for me. But you know, people will go to Tom Baker, who was the 4th. So it's always a fun discussion.
Well, yeah, it's probably generational too. I mean, you talk to anybody about like Bond, you know, who's your favorite Bond? You know,
it's exactly the same thing.
I mean, I'm probably one of the rarities that I look and I say Sean Connery is. You know, a lot of people in my generation, they look at Pierce Brosnan. They look at Pierce Brosnan as their Bond because that's what they grew up on. You know, for me, like in my early 20s and, you know, in the 30s, that Pierce was it. But he just never gravitated. So I'm sure the same thing goes for the Doctor.
Everybody, the good Doctor. Everybody has their favorites, and as I said, it takes a while to understand his, because he's very eccentric, you know, especially speech pattern and what he does. But, you know, once you get past that and see what he actually does, he's a great character in his own right.
I'm okay with the British accent. I've got no problems with that. My job is literally listening to people from all across this country with different accents. I can get through those. And I've been a big fan of British television for a while. So
especially recently, they've released a lot of good series on the BBC especially Orphan Black, you get a chance to watch that. They had Atlantis for a while. So BBC has really been knocking out of the park with their TV shows. And the thing about their TV shows, which is great, not very long. 10 episodes, 13, very short runs, and you're done. So,
yep, very good. All right, so that is The Good Doctor.
Very good.
All right, well, we're going to jump into our next segment. And this one is called Legends of the Long Box.
Legends of the Long Box.
All right, folks. So with Legends this week, and guys, this is our weekly add-in, or not add-on, but it's a new segment that we've been starting, talking about good comic book reads or something we've read or something we should suggest right now. Honestly, right now, for me, really, The Boys. I'm gonna throw that one in as my pick. Check out Volume 1. Season 1 of The Boys. So if you want to get caught up, you want to see the show, but you want to know what the source material is like, pick up Volume 1. You can get it out there. I know right now a lot of places are having it out there because of it being ran on Amazon. So you can get it out at your local comic book stores here in Orlando. Check out Acme Comics right there in Longwood, Florida, 434. Yeah, yes, just sir. Get out there and talk to those guys. I know they got them out there. But just check there. Also, if you're a digital folk like me, I do know Comicology is running. If you're a member of Comicology, they are running for, I think, the first four volumes you can borrow. After that, once it's just like a good crack dealer. They give you the free stuff, the first part of it free, but you want to pay for the rest. I'm telling you, that's how Comicology is. Like, man, they get you hooked on that first couple of runs. Like, yeah, you want me to pay? Shoot. All right. So, but yeah, that is going to be my pick. I'm not sure if Kane's been so busy with Doctor Who. I don't expect him to have a pick this week.
I have one.
Do you? Okay. But yeah,
something that I'm reading, and I've mentioned it before, but the new issue came out. It is the Vertigo Lucifer issue 10. I just picked it up. And as I told you before, Mike, it gets weirder and weirder and weirder. And issue 10 is no different. I've been loving this series. I know you haven't picked it up yet. It's based off the Sandman series. They actually have a couple different series going out. I think they have something with Dreams. And they don't have an actual Sandman, but it's part of the Sandman universe. He hasn't popped up yet. But issue 10, I picked that up. I got to say, I'm just digging it. It keeps going with that craziness story. Lucifer is still out there looking for his son with the witch mother that he had it with. Then he got a cop involved. Then he got archangels involved. Then he got demons eating people. It's just mere madness. And I gotta say, I've been enjoying the hell out of this series. So you probably want to start with issue 1. You don't want to jump into this with issue 10. But Josh and the boys at Acme Comics, 434-1792, they definitely have all the back issues. Ask Josh; he'll pick it up for you and start from there. It's a wild, wacky ride. And if you're a little bit religious, you may not want to read it. But it's
If you are, you shouldn't be picking up a book called Lucifer.
Yeah, you don't want to. Yeah, my dad sold this book.
Now, I do understand that. I know with the Sandman and Lucifer, the Vertigo is going away next year. It's going to be absorbed into the DC Black. I do understand that they are going to continue these runs. They're just going to drop them in there. And I heard a little rumor that they may be inside of the Black Label. For DC, they may be actually doing their own Sandman universe in its own little corner.
So, that would be a bad idea.
Yeah, because there is a lot attached to Sandman. You've got Sandman, you've got Lucifer, and just that world in general. And they are bringing it in. And I think the little thing I had read was about that they were talking about maybe keeping it its own little entity and just still be just being published under the Black Label. But you're not going to lose it. Just the name Vertigo is going away. I did read where they were saying that, it's an old name. Vertigo has an imagery that you pop up in your head, and they feeling very, we're being pushed to the side, Kane. They're feeling Vertigo is too 90s. So Black Label, I'm good with Black Label. I think Black Label's, got a nice ring to it. It's got a Jimmy Walker kind of feel. So grab a bottle of
whiskey. Johnny Walker Black and read some Black Label.
Yeah, exactly. So we're good with that. But like I said, folks, this is our, we will be doing these every week, but for me, the boys, check it out, especially check out the show. That way it's a companion piece to the show, and you'll see the minute differences. There are a few things I missed in the show that the book had, Butcher didn't have his dog, which I loved the dog in the comic book. He had a little, not a pit bull, but a boxer, or bulldog, sorry, little bulldog, sorry, he had with him. And that dog was just awesome. I think Killer or something like that. I forget what it was his name. But it just like certain things that you see in there. Like you'll actually see that the Huey, the main character in the show, in the book, looks like Simon Pegg, who played Huey's dad in the show.
That was different. Yeah, I saw that.
That threw me off. I was like, because I knew Peg was going to be in there. I was like, oh, is he going to play Huey? Because that's who they actually based it off of. They actually called him and said, hey, we're doing a book. We want to base it off of you. You cool? He's like, yeah. And so I think it was kind of a nice nod to the readers of the original series to throw him in there. But I was kind of hoping he would play play himself.
Yeah, I saw that. I was like, wait a minute. Is he playing his dad and not Huey himself? I was like, oh, yeah. Okay.
It was fine. I really like the guy that they've got playing him. So
he's really good. I don't know who he is. I've never seen him before.
I've seen him in a few other things. I just said the name doesn't pop into my head right off the bat of what I've seen him in. But he's been around, and just check it out. Like I said, there are a few scenes, a few things that are different. I mean, definitely there's a it's very provocative in the in the comic books. A lot of sex, a lot of things going on. And they're just like I said, a few slight little changes. But to me, those slight little changes weren't major changes. I could deal with them. So, but yeah, definitely that is mine. And like I said, Kane's is the Lucifer continuing. I actually did pick up a couple of new first runs, so I'm going to read over those. I picked up the first new run for Valkyrie for Marvel. I want to check out what our good old Jane is up to. And there's a couple other DC picks I grabbed as well. I'm just kind of curious. And so next week I will have a few first run reviews.
And I will have some reviews also. I'll be able to, after doing all my Whovian experience, I'm going to get back on board as well. So I'll have some other ones besides Lucifer, which is still one of my favorite runs I'm reading right now, but I think some new issues are dropping this week, so I can't wait.
Oh, the guy that plays Huey is Jack Quaid. He's Meg Ryan and Dennis Quaid's son. He was in the Hunger Games. Yes, that is who that is.
That's his son?
That is Dennis and Meg Ryan's son. Yep.
Oh,
he was in the Hunger Games. That's why he kind of looked familiar.
Wow. Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. That's the only other one I can think that he's been in. Oh, in Rampage with Dwayne Johnson and the albino gorilla. But you got to love that one. So.
I like the game better. I'm sorry. The movie was. Now, if The Rock was actually fighting the gorilla, I think it would have been a better movie.
Right. So that's what we have this week, folks. If anybody has anything they want to communicate with us, talk to us, check us out. We did drop a new episode of our Midnight Movie Review this weekend. We did do Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure that is out there. And, just check it out. HeroesAsylum.com has our links to everything. We do have them broken down, so you can go to just this podcast, or if you just want to listen to the Midnight Movie Review. And I also want to thank all our new listeners out there, guys. Thank you very much. We have bumped up our downloads. We are catching a nice stride here, and I love to see that. Just check us out on Facebook, guys. I think we got a big community growing over there as well. And I want to thank the group of whoever they were. Thank you very much, guys. I'm not a big guy on pushing iTunes and ratings. I'm more concerned about, and I want us, you guys as the listeners, to be part of a community and get out there and talk with each other and get involved. But we actually have a 5-star rating right now out on Apple iTunes.
Woo!
So yeah, thank you guys. Doesn't do much for us, but it helps us stroke the ego. So we definitely want to thank you guys
for conversation. Hey, you got a 5-star podcast.
That's right. Yeah, how you doing? So, definitely, guys, thank you very much. And like I said, check out the website and check out our Facebook. And we are getting busy on other areas. What areas are those?
Twitter and Instagram, especially Instagram. A lot of new stuff is dropping on Instagram. Check us out there. And as always, get to the asylum.
Have a good week, folks. Peace.
I'm the Doctor. He's a collaborator.
Engage.
Shazam!